From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 10th day of August, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Frayn Olson from North Dakota State University. He's an agricultural economist. We'll hear about grain bin entrapments and how those have persisted through the years, despite training of farm and rescue squads. And then we'll turn our attention to the farm bill that's at least no more for the moment until the Senate returns from its summer recess. And as we close out our time together, we'll talk about the weather forecast too. We'll do that with Mark Russo of Everstream Analytics on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day, 438 and a quarter, three quarters lower. December down a quarter at 461 and three quarters. In the March at 477 and a quarter, a half a cent lower. November beans, $11.79 and a half, up three and a quarter. January, $11.94 and three quarters, 3.5 cents higher. Bean meal down $3.40. The bean oil up $1.29. Soft red winter wheat a penny higher at $6.59 and a quarter. And the hard red, this is the December contract as well, it finished at $7.31 and a quarter. It was 0.75 cents higher. Live cattle futures today, $1.62 and a half higher. Feeders down 65 cents. Lean hogs up $1.45. Crude oil $4 higher, about $82.24. Gasoline on the wholesale price at $3.14 and 6 tenths of a cent. That's up 16 cents for the day. And diesel fuel at $4.19 and 9 tenths, two and or rather 29.5 cents higher for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 175 points at this hour. Frayn Olson, Extension Agricultural Economist from North Dakota State University, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Frayn. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, always a pleasure to visit. I enjoy it.
Let's talk about what's been in the marketplace and what you think has been the driver. Many suspect it has been weather, though I'm not certain that that's the case. It feels much more like 2022 for me, and the wars in the Black Sea and the Mid East. And I wonder how that impacts the flow of money and consequently the price of corn, soybeans, wheat, commodities in general.
Sure. And I agree with you there. You know, so we got to separate in our brains, number one, from a fundamentals kind of supply demand situation, which really helps us impact or impacts the general trends in the marketplace versus a lot of the day-to-day volatility or even week-to-week volatility that we get. And my sense of what's going on is in looking at the numbers, we see a fairly strong correlation or relationship between what's happening in the energy markets and what's happening in the grain markets. And there's reasons for that. There is a fundamental reason, because we use a lot of our grain in the energy market. So obviously from gasoline prices and ethanol prices and the connection then into corn prices. We get some of the same thing going on with the soybean oil complex, because well over 50% of our soybean oil is now used for either biodiesel or renewable diesel. However, I can't explain all of that volatility just because of this fundamental connection. A lot of it has to, in my view, has to do with the investment community. Okay, so let's understand really quickly. If I'm managing somebody's investment portfolio, okay, and my training is in the financial markets, the stocks and bonds, and how do I manage a nice portfolio from an investment perspective? Well, a portion of that is usually commodities, but if I start to see, because of whatever is going on in the war or whatever is happening with the general economy, all of a sudden stock prices start to drop. Well, if I see stock prices dropping, I'm going to try and sell off some of those and then reinvest or rebalance my portfolio. Typically, when we see stocks and start to drop, we start to see an increase in the energy complex. Okay, and that's really, again, from the Strait of Hormuz and even a lot of the things that are happening in the Black Sea. A lot of that is driven by oil. Okay. Well, I'm a finance guy. I'm not a commodities trader. So usually what happens is they look to an index, and they have different commodity indexes, like the Goldman Sachs is one of those examples. So I'm buying and selling this index because it's a prepackaged portfolio of commodities. I don't have to worry about what's happening in each individual commodity complex. So Goldman Sachs has 50 to 60% of their index is composed of the energies, crude oil, gasoline, diesel fuel, natural gas, etc. But they also have a pre-blend, a portion of that, about 20%-ish, is the grains. We have 15 to 20% in the meat complex. We have some in the softs, which would be sugar and orange juice and lumber. We also have some in the precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, and industrial metals like aluminum. Okay, so this is a really nice investment tool for me because it's a pre-blended portfolio. So if I'm buying into the commodity complex because energy prices are going up, I automatically purchase a portion of the grain and meat complex as well. And so as I'm sh as these investors or these financial managers are shifting their money around, we get this extra demand base coming in from these index complexes. Okay. And so there's also an investment connection that goes on. And in my view, a lot of that in that volatility, the variability we have in day-to-day prices, is driven from some of that money moving back and forth between what's happening in the stock market and what's happening in the energy market, and therefore through these indexes.
If this is true, and prices have been driven mostly to the upside, some to the downside because of this, you would think that basis would have been doing its job, and that consequently, I would guess that it should have widened out by at some point.
Well, to a degree, yes. So it's not like we get a one-for-one movement. Just because the futures prices go up doesn't mean that the basis will automatically adjust. Local basis levels typically don't adjust. They let the futures market do kind of the day-to-day fine-tuning. And then the local basis levels are really trying to kind of regulate the flow of grain. So it's not until prices get high enough that all of a sudden we see a bunch of farmers selling, that the basis levels may start to widen out. Or on the flip side, if prices drop dramatically, and let's say that I'm an ethanol processor or an oilseed crusher, that all of a sudden chokes off some of those farmer sales, that I have to start increasing my basis to be able to get those local supplies back through the chain. So yes, basis does adjust, but it's not that real sensitive day-to-day movement thing. It really doesn't adjust. It's more sticky. It's that the pressure in the futures market has to build to a point, either on the way up or on the way down, before you start to see basis levels starting to adjust, again, trying to regulate that flow of grain. So yes, we do see basis adjustment, but typically not on a day-to-day-to-day basis.
There would be two times of in the year, I would think, that this could be a problem because grain flow moves automatically, relatively speaking. One of them is harvest, and the other time is February, March, when for corn, particularly when it comes out of the bin, oftentimes. Are there issues that producers should be aware of going into the harvest season in this case?
Okay, well, there's two pieces going on, because right now today we're dealing with old crop and new crop simultaneously. And I know there's some guys there, and I know up here in North Dakota, there's some guys that are really trying to figure out, all right, what do I need for bin space? How much corn do I need to clean out? How much wheat do I need to clean out to be able to make room for this new crop harvest coming in? So we have the short term kind of supply issues to clean out the bins and get everything set up. And then we have coming into harvest, how big is this harvest going to be, and how much do we try and ship into the elevator system right at harvest, and how much do we try and bin and deliver later? And so we've got both of those things going on, and that's obviously one of the reasons you see, at least up here in North Dakota, some pretty significant difference in basis levels for immediate delivery versus for harvest delivery.
So your basis is wide for immediate delivery?
No, our basis is actually pretty narrow for immediate delivery. We have, especially on soybeans, we've got a couple of the crush plants, soybean crush plants that have one of them a couple days ago had a positive basis for soybeans, which in our area is pretty much unheard of. when you look at harvest delivery and harvest delivery basis, yeah, then they're much, much more normal. We're looking at, for soybeans, probably a minus 70 or 80 basis this year, this for this harvest. Corn, we're looking at a minus probably 55 to 65 on most of our corn basis, which is pretty typical. We're just starting our spring wheat harvest, and so those harvest basis levels are pretty normal right now because we're getting quite a bit of flow of wheat into the system.
If fundamentals don't change, and in this case, by don't change, I mean we're still in the midst of a war in Iran, and we're still in the midst of the war in the Ukraine, does basis widen more dramatically this fall?
Not necessarily. Because again, so we think about, let's separate what's going on. So the futures market is trying to regulate the flow of grain just over time, right? So, you know, and usually we see a big influx of grain right at harvest. So, but that's at a national level. Right, that's kind of a national, international level. We're signaling to all the participants, what do we, you know, how much should we store now, and how much should we deliver deliver now versus store for later delivery. The basis level becomes much more localized because that's not only trying to influence across time, you know, how should I store it and how long should I store it, but it's also cross location. We need to make sure that the right amount of grain gets the right point at the right time. And so now all of a sudden we get these spatial things going on. So up here in North Dakota, we're going to have probably an okay corn crop, but it's not going to be a bumper crop versus what you're seeing in central and southern Illinois. From what I'm understanding, it's looking like a fantastic corn crop. So obviously the basis in your local areas are going to be very different than they are up here, especially if we have for those ethanol crushers that are now trying to make sure that they have the supply chain they need for their crushing demand.
Thank you much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next month.
All right. Always a pleasure to visit. Again, I enjoy the conversation. You always have some really good questions.
Oh, thank you, Frayne. That's Frayne Olson. Of course, he's an Extension Agricultural Economist with North Dakota State University Extension. Speaking of Extension and some of the work that's done on campuses like NDSU, right here tomorrow at the University of Illinois, you're invited to join us for the inauguration of the Alma Mater plots. This is on South First Street at the Research Farm. Just go south from the State Farm Center or the Memorial Stadium on First Street. You'll run into it eventually. It kicks off at 7:45 a.m., coffee and donuts, sign in. Adam Davis will be there. He is the head of crop sciences, and Andrew Margonaut will talk about what the takeaways are from the 150 years of the Marl plots, and then what, of course, the expectations are for the new Alma Mater plots, where there'll be nitrogen inhibitor studies and tile monitoring equipment. They'll also have some heirloom corn plots, tillage and surface runoff plots, cover crop and phosphorus accumulation trials, all at the Alma Mater plots. You're asked to come. There is a boxed lunch. You don't have to pre-register. You can just show up at 7:45 a.m. That's on South First Street at the Research Farms. Check it out tomorrow morning. Let's talk about grain bin safety now. A new report from Purdue University shows at least 48 grain entrapment cases were reported last year, including 22 deaths nationwide. While those numbers have improved from past years, researchers say the danger inside grain bins for farmers remains very real. Bill Field, a longtime farm safety expert from Purdue, says the numbers only tell part of the story.
There was a lot of effort invested into trying to reduce this problem from occurring, everything from improving grain quality so farmers don't have to get in bins, to new grain bin safety standards, to new signage. And I think it's all having an impact, but boy, every year we still have 20, 30 of these incidents occurring, and about 60% of them die as a result of suffocation.
Field says tracking these incidents is challenging because there is no single national reporting system. Purdue, and for that matter here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, the folks at the University of Illinois rely on media reports, word of mouth, and even obituaries to build databases. But beyond the numbers, he says, communities need to have realistic conversations about what happens when someone becomes trapped. The fire department simply cannot react fast enough. To be clear, Field is not discounting the importance of rescue training. In fact, he helped develop the first commercial grain rescue tube and has trained thousands of emergency responders. But he says the industry may have focused too much on the rescue after an accident happens rather than preventing the accident in the first place.
We have distributed thousands of grain rescue tubes all over the United States, including into counties where there are no grain bins.
Field says the most effective rescue is the one that never has to happen. That means keeping grain in good condition, avoiding entry into the bins whenever possible, and never going inside alone. He says rescue equipment and trained responders still play an important role, but prevention remains the best tool farmers have to save lives. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. There's just really one ag news story of import for the day. The election year politics appear to have stalled the Senate Farm Bill. Republicans rejected Democratic amendments that would give states more time to reduce SNAP overpayments and avoid funding penalties. Senate Ag Committee Chairman John Bozeman says that decision comes at a cost for farmers and states.
You can mark on about three fingers people that are involved in trying to get additional time. It's not going to happen.
Democrats argued, on the other hand, the SNAP issue is about more than program cost. It's about protecting the Farm Food Coalition that has supported farm bills for decades. Illinois' Dick Durbin, a Democrat, says that coalition needs to remain intact.
That winning coalition has paid off ever since. We need it again, and it has to be part of this SNAP conversation. We want to support the farm bill. I certainly do. But I want to make sure that I'm fair to my state and fair to the people who are receiving SNAP benefits who are being disadvantaged.
Republicans, however, say Democrats are using the SNAP debate to delay action until after the election. Kansas Republican Jerry Moran says that perception is damaging trust on the committee.
The suggestion was, well, the Democrats aren't going to let us pass a farm bill until after the election. They're going to wait to see what the outcome of the election is. I think we need to reestablish the trust that this committee is about this committee's work.
And the committee voted 10 to 11 against advancing the bill. But the decision could be revisited in September if Republicans have all their members present. Even then, Democrats would still be needed to move the bill to the Senate floor. Bozeman says the delay leaves farmers waiting on issues they have no control over.
Trying to hope that we give them some hope about an issue that they don't have anything to do with. Lousy record keeping at the state level. It's not their fault.
Without a political solution, except for an election, the wait continues, and that means a modernized farm bill, including year-round E15, it remains on hold. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here. He is with Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us today.
Hello there, Todd. Thanks for having me, as always.
Early this morning, I decided to do a little work outside, and it was just awful. Just dog days, very humid and hot. Really, it seemed really hot this morning, in fact. I know the temperatures aren't going terribly high, roughly speaking, but man, I feel like this is with us for a while. What do you see across the whole of the heart of the Corn Belt?
Yeah, well, Todd, it's gonna be a while before we see some cooler, less humid conditions, and it's really the humidity or those very high dew points, which is likely what made you feel really hot here this morning. We've seen dew points climb into the 70s, even some low 80s in portions of the Corn Belt, which for any time of year, you know, that's pretty much as bad as it gets. And when just the highest amount of of water vapor here in the lower levels of the atmosphere. So again, that's going to stick around here for a while, much of this week. Next week, things look to ease a little bit, but still stay, you know, relatively warmer than normal, just, you know, not as hot and humid as what we're going to see this week.
Can you tell me about some of the driest conditions in the Midwest, where those are? I've seen some really awful reports starting this week, particularly from parts of North Dakota, and I don't know how widespread that might be.
Yeah, the driest pockets, and they really are pockets right now, they're not large scale, but in parts of South Dakota, in parts of North Dakota, like in around the Fargo area and in southeast North Dakota in general, that's one pocket. And then another pocket is in around the, you know, Sioux Falls, Sioux City area there in the western part of the Corn Belt, you know, including northwest Iowa. So they have gotten some rains here over the past week, but looking back over the past 30 days or so, those are some of the driest areas or driest pockets, specifically in, you know, the largest corn producing areas here in the Midwest.
And then if you come just a bit further to the east of there, for instance, through a large part of Iowa into Minnesota, things change pretty dramatically, very quickly, and they're really good.
Yes, certainly here, the combination of rain activity here combined with the temperatures too, which even though like for this week it's hot and humid, we really have not gotten any kind of pattern this summer that has featured sustained, really yield threatening heat in any significant way. So as a result of that, this combination of temperatures and rainfall provide, you know, very good soil moisture conditions for both corn and soybean development.
Anything that we should discuss today in the United States or around the planet that I haven't asked you yet?
Yeah, a couple other items of note. Number one, at least in terms of tropical risks, and you know, we are heading towards the heart of the Atlantic hurricane season, which is the second half of August and September into early October. While there might be some development of tropical waves in the Atlantic, we're not seeing anything that looks threatening onshore or impacting any land areas here coming up. So for the time being, there still is no significant tropical threats here. And so I did want to highlight that. And then, you know, in related to that, while the Atlantic is still relatively quiet, all of the tropical action is in the Pacific. There's developing waves in the eastern Pacific. And then in the western Pacific, we've seen a tropical cyclone Dolphin impact areas of southeast China here over the weekend. More rice impacts here from the storm versus corn and soybeans, but likely, you know, some relatively small-scale issues there. And then the port of Ningbo, which is China's largest agriculture import port, was closed for a couple of days. That's in the process of reopening. We're not seeing any kind of long-term closures here, but that is certainly something impacted from a logistical standpoint.
Hey, thank you much. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.